and welcome to the Giraffe Social Media Podcast. It's what social media managers are talking about. I'm Chloe, and today I'm joined by our lovely co-hosts, Katie and Ellie. Coming up on this week's episode, are we all suffering from influencer fatigue? We'll be sharing our thoughts on why the world may be done with traditional influencer marketing. Plus, we'll discuss some alternative ways brands can engage their valuable audiences. You guys, let's get straight into the topic of this week's episode because I've seen this discussion take center stage in a lot of marketing circles recently. And that's that there's been a distinct change in the attitudes we hold towards influencers and the content they provide us. And we've been seeing this idea that many of us actually don't want to be influenced anymore. And with the cost of living rising, a lot of us genuinely can't afford to be influenced either. And I think this overall shift in attitude has now been coined influencer fatigue. And it's not necessarily a new concept. When we were doing our research on this, I've seen it dates back to at least 2018. But I think where we've had the pandemic and TikTok has risen in popularity, it's become a lot more prevalent over the past 12 months or so. But to give the listeners a rough idea of what this means, the influencer marketing platform Tracker recently released data that shows while the number of active users and sponsored posts across industries like makeup, skincare, and hair care increased over the last 3 months of 2021, engagement has fallen consistently quarter over quarter. So it seems like many people are just becoming less and less interested in what influencers have to say and the type of content they're putting out there. So we've been watching this trend unfold, and we have a few thoughts on how the pandemic might have changed how people value, how they shop, and most importantly, how they consume content. What do you guys think of this?
Personally, from before the pandemic, I was following like certain influencers across like all different platforms from like YouTube to Instagram. And they kind of started off being like relatable influencers. So like they go to shops that I would shop in, which is obviously like much more affordable. But kind of over the past few years, like even over the course of the pandemic, they've like shifted into this like designer, sort of influencer, which obviously like the normal person, like if their kind of consumers of their content like were like me, you know, they're not going to be resonating with them anymore. And I think that's kind of like a big shift that I've seen amongst a lot of my sort of influencers that I follow. I don't know whether you guys had the same thing.
Totally. I mean, Remy Bada, who is a really popular TikTok content creator, she does the relatable mid-sized fashion hauls. She recently went on the Call Her Daddy podcast, I think, and said that where she's grown so exponentially, she was kind of known for making these relatable hauls and like representing all sort of body types, but where she's kind of grown in that popularity, naturally the amount of brand interest she's garnered has risen, and so she's working with a lot bigger brands, and people kind of retaliate and kind of go against her saying, well, you're no longer relatable, like you've changed. But I think that's just kind of the natural process that happens as you grow into that sort of celebrity type of influencer. So it's a hard line for influencers to follow, really, because they can't, in order for them to grow and like make, you know, the content creation profitable for them, they have to work with these larger brands, but then they kind of lose that small niche audience that they once had, and they lose what they were known for, I guess.
Yeah, no, like I totally agree. And I think, you know, I think when we're saying like influencer fatigue, I don't know about you guys, but I think it's more like the huge influencers. I think like micro influencers are still here to stay because they have still got that like little relatability. They've got their niche audience and they've got like a really engaged audience still. Whereas like there are so many influencers now, and with things like TikTok, it's so much easier to grow a following now. Mm-hmm. So you can have, I don't know if you guys saw like, I think it was at VidCon this year. They had like a few TikTokers there. And one of them who has like millions of followers only sold like 2 t-shirts. So it's mm-hmm. like that follower size isn't necessarily translating into engagement anymore. And I think that potentially is causing an impact in how, like the return of investment on like bigger influencers now, you know?
I mean, I think you're really highlighting the fact that brands shouldn't be going for kind of the biggest names or like the biggest celebrities as such. Like they should be going for the smaller influencers with, you know, those kind of niche communities, because at the end of the day, you're right, they are going to have like the smaller influencers will probably have a better return of investment. And actually it's cheaper for the brands to kind of go with that influencer, and it looks like, you know, it's much more trustworthy and more authentic, which is obviously what we've kind of seen the shift in consumers kind of like buying habits and what they engage with.
And then like kind of going off of that as well with like, you know, thinking of the consumer, like I think this started back in like 2018 at like the beginning rise of the influencers with like Kylie Jenner and all of that. Like, I don't know about you guys, PR packages got huge and like a little bit excessive, a little bit ridiculous. And there was those like huge brand trips and everything, which is great. It's great to get your content out there. And it did work for a really long time. But I think, like you said at the beginning, Chloe, like, you know, cost of living's going up. People can't, this isn't attainable anymore. And I think, you know, people who are loyal customers to certain brands would much rather the money that they're spending on the product go to the product instead of it going, like being transferred into free content for an influencer who may never have even used the like brand before. They may just get the product, use it once, and then never use it again, you know?
I mean, I think it's much easier to spot inauthentic content now. And I think that kind of, you know, links into the influencer fatigue for like just scrolling through any feed, whether that's my YouTube suggested or even the people that I'm subscribed to, you know, Instagram feeds, TikTok feeds, you can see when they're an ad before it says that they're an ad. And I feel like it's everywhere. So that is kind of like the influencer fatigue that everyone's seeing on their feeds. So I think it's just more important than ever to kind of have relatable content. And I still get sucked into like random people on my TikTok for you page on that with their like clothing hauls or their beauty hauls. And I will look into the product and I will kind of consider buying it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to get your guys' take, because I think part of where, you know, when you look into influencer fatigue, I mentioned it's been around since 2018. And I imagine that was largely over on Instagram, where we were seeing very much the same content for every brand and every influencer they worked with. Like it seemed like, you know, the cookie cutter of influencer marketing was the girls taking a selfie with their teeth whitening kit or with their hair gummies. And it just looked the same every post you saw. And that was fine at one point. But then I think we all became quite sick of seeing the same content pretty much, yeah, as I said, copy and pasted across every influencer. So do you think that where TikTok has come into play, we've seen a bit of a shift in that? Because I do find myself still, you're almost seeing more sponsored content on TikTok now, but the format has changed and there are very different variations of it. But I wonder if it still kind of has the same effect where we're just kind of really done with the oversaturation of it.
I think that there is the oversaturation, but it's much more engaging content. And each content creator has a different way of doing it. So it's not like your standard, like pose with a skinny tee. I remember though, that was like a big thing for ages. So instead of it being kind of just like a standardized picture with an influencer of them like smiling or posing with it, it's kind of like, get ready with me and this product or this brand, which is much more engaging, much more relatable. And you can actually see they're actively using it rather than just kind of like a product promotion that you get in an advert, for example, rather than, you know, like an actual influencer content.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder if this is also, I think we kind of based this episode off a TikTok that we saw, Katie, you sent to us, where they kind of talked about this creator, how brands like CeraVe, or just like Amazon products are really sort of performing well on social media platforms because people are kind of craving that more affordable lifestyle, and those saving tips and those like dupes, as they say. And so that's where I think we're seeing those kinds of brands thrive, because it's a much more, I don't know, a much more realistic and accessible item. And so it will be interesting to see how these brands kind of incorporate influencer marketing into their strategies if they haven't already, in a much more subtle way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, like with TikTok as well and TikTok influencers, because the algorithm is so good, you're not going to be shown content that's being sold to you that you're not in the market for, you know? I think we've all had it where like we've thought of something and then it shows up on your TikTok feed like 2 days later. So I think like TikTok, maybe that's the way for influencer marketing to go. But like you said, Chloe, like it's got to be a bit more natural and a bit more like relatable, and then kind of go back to the roots of what influencer marketing was in the first place.
Totally. So I wonder then, before we get into our tip segment in just a second, where we kind of share some of our insights into this, where do you guys kind of see the influencer marketing industry going? And like, how do we kind of get out of this influencer fatigue state, especially like on places on Instagram where the format is changing and engagement is a bit lower than it usually is? Like, what's the, I don't know, what do you think? What are your predictions?
I personally think that maybe we're going to see more of like a brand ambassador route rather than one-off influencer campaigns. I mean, we've worked with brand ambassadors. We know it's like a really good way to get that consistent content and that consistent audience. I personally think that's kind of going to be the way that we're going to be looking at going now.
I mean, jumping on the back of what Katie just said, I think it's going to be the long-term partnerships that kind of take over rather than the one-off. Like creating a reel, for example, or like a one-off TikTok, it will be kind of like yearly partnerships, if not longer, that are going to kind of stand out, and that it's going to kind of like prove that authenticity and that trust amongst consumers, and also like build that audience with the brand as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's definitely more impactful that way to kind of have the one influencer that you associate with your brand, and it would definitely help combat that sort of fatigue status where, you know, brands like maybe Misguided or Pretty Little Thing send out thousands of PR packages each month to these micro influencers and larger influencers and celebrity influencers. So you're constantly kind of being saturated with that product, whether it's disclosed or not. But I think the brands that kind of get it right just work with, you know, two or three or a small handful month on month, like, you know, for 6 to 12 months, and they then become kind of associated with the brand in a sense where you're not seeing it anywhere, but your most trusted creators and influencers are like sort of promoting it. And it does almost seem more authentic in that way, where you can tell the brand is really making sure that they're aligning themselves with the right kind of creators, as opposed to just sending it out to whoever seems to have any kind of audience. So yeah, I think you guys are right in that.
I think a really good example of the brand ambassador recently is with eBay announcing their first ambassador, which is Tasha, how do you say her last name? Tasha Gori from Love Island. And obviously that's kind of like a really good segue from them introducing eBay as like the secondhand fashion, you know, the brand of Love Island this year. And I think it was like a really perfect transition. And that was like a really good example of kind of the shift in kind of like the influencer marketing realm, I guess you could say. And they're kind of like paving that pathway for that. And then obviously a few weeks later, we saw Pretty Little Thing announce that India, also from Love Island, is going to be the face of their marketplace. So it is kind of showcasing that shift from the traditional influencer into more of a long-term partnership brand ambassador.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just goes to show as well, like while we're on the topic of the the Love Island brand deals and Pretty Little Thing and eBay, is like showing how important it is to align with those audiences. I think maybe not so much eBay because they are like a sort of resale platform, but Pretty Little Thing, you know, over every year that comes, they seem to have more and more mounting pressure over, you know, their unethical practices and things like that. So I think this was kind of just a really smart move for them to partner with one of the more fashionable girls on the show in a more kind of like, I don't want to say ethical or sustainable because it's probably not that realistically, but, you know, to kind of align their values with someone who fits that profile a bit more than I couldn't see it doing as well if they did that with Gemma, who they obviously just had as a regular ambassador. But so yeah, it's a good thing to see, and we'll kind of touch on it a little bit more in our tip segment. Now it's time for our tips and tricks segment, where we share what we've learned in the world of social media and how you can apply it to your social strategy. Guys, since we spent today's episode talking about influencer fatigue, it's only right that we let the listeners know that it's not all doom and gloom when it comes to influencer marketing. It's still really profitable and churns a really good return on investment for brands all year round. But I think for influencer marketing to truly make a comeback, brands, marketers, and influencers are going to have to go back to the drawing board and think more creatively. So guys, I want to hear your tips and your opinions on how you think influencer marketing can thrive again.
I mean, just straight off the bat, I think user-generated content, although it's not necessarily influencer marketing in terms of they're paying somebody for their content, I think it's a really great way of kind of utilizing authentic content, which is going to kind of bring the engagement back. It's going to also, you know, engage with, you know, kind of day-to-day people who use the products daily. And it will kind of just boost that, you know, those overall KPIs and get the brand like back on track. And then they can kind of introduce different elements of the influencer marketing back in, kind of alongside user-generated content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that saying, I think I've said on the podcast once before, but it's like not repurposing your influencer content is like wearing a good outfit once, like you're just not making the most out of it. And I think we're definitely going to see a huge resurgence of like content creators and user-generated content where they kind of create this content for you, surprise, surprise, and they don't end up sort of posting it on their own channels, but it's purely for these brands to use in their digital marketing. So that's for like paid advertising, email marketing, websites, social media, and just to like put everywhere so that you've got this really, you know, authentic and well-produced content that someone else has done, and someone that kind of already has this, you know, a proven reputation for creating content that aligns with your brand for you to use without kind of the strings attached of having that person post. And it's often a cheaper alternative for brands. And I think especially for brands that don't have like in-house photographers or things like that, it's a really good route to take. So yeah, I think that's an awesome tip. I think for me, the age of passive audience is over. We see now that consumers are more actively engaging with each other and brands while searching for authentic and unique and valuable content. We are, as we kind of mentioned, sick of seeing this cookie cutter content that, you know, it's squeaky clean and it doesn't apply to us and it's unrealistic or it's unrelatable. So I think brands need to look to create content and align with influencers who they can see helping them form these communities with their audience and kind of base these communities off shared interests and shared beliefs. So I think going back to this eBay example, Tasha Ghouri and eBay's collaboration is a really good example of this, because Tasha was probably undisputably the most sort of fashionable girl on Love Island. Like her outfits just slapped every time. And so she would have been a really excellent pick for any fashion brand coming out of the villa to work with. And whether this has kind of been her decision or they just presented the best offer to her, I think she is a perfect fit for them, because she is going to help garner, you know, build that community based on these values. More and more people are turning towards more ethical ways to shop and recycle and upcycle and whatever else. And I think she's the perfect ambassador because she is such a fashionable person and most of her looks on Love Island were reworn. You see her TikToks coming out while she was still in the villa from like months ago wearing outfits that she was wearing in there. So she had quite obviously, you know, followed the rules and reworn and stuff. So I think that is kind of the key to keeping your audience engaged and kind of slowing down this fatigue, is by making those real connections, right? Like having really authentic brand partnerships.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, like we always say on here, like community is so important for your brand identity. And I think, you know, even for like smaller brands who can't afford Love Island contestants, because who can, you know, like even they can like get on the train and they can get influencers who are maybe a bit more niche, a little bit smaller, and also are like really grateful for the opportunity to be working with a brand, you know, and they're going to bring that enthusiasm with their content that they create. And then, you know, teaming up with them, like you said, Ellie, in like, with like content creation and user generated content, like it's a perfect mix, and it's foolish to just ignore that.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. If you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss the next one. And if you'd like to leave us a review on your favorite podcasting app, we wouldn't mind that either. We've been Giraffe Social Media. You've been amazing. We'll see you next time. We'll be right back.